relationships, and I have all kinds of wonderful suggestions. Somebody had suggested that this, the fair, needs to come off. Just needs to be how to fight. So the thing is, you know, the lessons are about how to fight fair. I got a feeling you don't need lessons on how to fight. I think that kind of happens sometimes. So that's kind of the natural thing. So tonight, last week, we kind of set the stage. Oh, actually, before we get there, let me back up just a little bit. Talking about suggestions, knowing about what we're going to fight. Brother Chuck had his suggestion. He brought a peace pipe for us. So if any couple needs to sit down and smoke the peace pipe, what I told him was, oh, it was empty. There's nothing in it, you know. The other thing is tonight, please, I need the cards tonight. We're not going to talk about these tonight, but I would like these at the end of services. So who forgot their card and needs a new one? Who didn't like your first answers and want a new one? Now, your spouse said no, you did not write that on there. Do you guys need a couple? Okay, what else we need? I got two more. Okay, so fill these out, and then after services, you can just put them face down on the entry thing in there. Don't put a name on them. I don't need to know who they are, who they're from. And so please do that, and then we'll talk about those in one of these lessons coming up. So we're talking about relationships. And tonight we're going to talk about conflict resolution. Relationships having conflict. And it's kind of interesting that you know, I talk about fight, and I understand that we all have different levels and our relationships are all different, that, you know, some people have blow-up fights, some people have, you know, casual disagreements, some people have, you know, a very cool period where nobody's talking, and sometimes, you know, we say, well, we don't ever fight, but we go 3 days without talking. Well, that's some kind of a conflict, you know, something's going on there. So, we have some kind of resolution or way in which we deal with difficulties, conflict, disagreements, fights, you know, all these different terms. And so we talk about that. Now, we talked last week about all relationships are broken. That's from the standpoint that our relationship with God is broken because of sin. And because of that, our relationship with one another is broken. I think it's very, very fascinating. I don't want to redo last week's lesson, but when Adam and Eve sinned, they went and hid from God, but it also changed their relationship with one another. Not only did they see God differently, they now saw each other differently. It says when God created them and brought the woman unto man, it says, and they were naked and were not ashamed. Well, once they sinned, they now wanted each other covered, even in their own presence. And so that being ashamed in their own presence changed. So the broken relationship not only has to do with our relationship with God, it has to do with our relationship with one another. One of the things that's kind of interesting is in the dealing with the Ten Commandments, when you look at those, the first five have to do with our relationship with God. The second five have to do with our relationship with man. And we saw the video, and I thought it was very poignant that Brother Hunter taught and used it on a Sunday morning in Sunday school. And it asked the question, have you ever stolen anything? Have you ever taken anything from anybody? And I think that we would all say, yeah, we probably have. Have you ever told a lie, any kind of lie? Anything that's not a truth isn't a lie. Well, the thing about the Ten Commandments and the issue is, you know, not so much of what we did and right and wrong, that's one of the issues, but the other thing is, how did it make the other person feel? Well, I never told them that I lied behind their back. Well, okay, but how would it have made them feel if they would have known? How would it have made them feel if you took $5 from me, how would that make me feel? There would be some trust issues, right? And so the issue is the Ten Commandments also illustrate those broken relationships, not only with God,
but also with one another. And so one of the purposes of the Ten Commandments, there's two purposes. One is to show us that we aren't perfect and our relationship with God is broken and our relationship with man is broken. But it also, after we know that it's broken, it also shows us the standard by which we can serve God. Now, Joyce is smiling because I'm going to be teaching on the Ten Commandments at camp. And she said, before we get started, she leaned and says, don't teach the lesson on Ten Commandments. Okay, I'm done with the Ten Commandments part. But the point is the Ten Commandments do show broken relationships. And as we talked last week, all relationships are broken. And what's fascinating is, as it says in Philippians, the fourth chapter, I can do all things through Christ that strengtheneth me. We find that God has given us the power for all things that sin has destroyed through Christ, they can be fixed. Well, one of those things is relationships. And I use these verses as a text verse, and it should be 2 Corinthians 5, 18 and 19. But it's kind of interesting that God has given, all things are given to God, who hath reconciled us unto himself by Jesus Christ, and hath given to us the ministry of reconciliation. So God has given us, through Jesus Christ, the ability to heal relationships. That has great potential in dealing with our relationships with one another. With anybody, whether it be a spouse, whether it be a friend, whether it be a sibling, whether it be a parent, through Christ, we can have reconciliation. And then the last one, and hath committed unto us the words. Words are powerful. Words can hurt. And words can heal. And he's given us the words of reconciliation. We can have restored relationships. So let's talk tonight about relationships, the dynamics of relationships, conflict, how to fight fair. And I don't know how far we'll get, but we're going to cover some of these topics. Fascinating verse, Romans 12, 18. You know, a lot of verses say, thou shalt, God commands, you will. This is a powerful relationship verse. And somebody know what a qualifier is? If. Okay. What does that mean? It's not an absolute, right? So it doesn't say that we must, you will. There's a qualifier there. If it be possible. Then he's not even done there with qualifying it, is it? As much as lieth in you. One of the things, relationships take part on two levels or two sides. Now, I can do everything within my power to make the relationship peaceable, but Joyce can keep messing that up, can't she? Right? She has it in her power to destroy my peace, does she not? In every relationship, whoever you're having the relationship with, they have it within their power to destroy the peace. I do want you to understand, you have it in your power to destroy their peace. And it's never one-sided. All relationships, you know, people want to come and they say, well, Brother Harlan, you know, this, this, and this. I have learned one thing in dealing with people in relationships. There are two sides to every story. And it's never all one person's fault, even when somebody is involved in bad things with sin. I mean, there's all kinds of things that we do play a part, and we need to be very, very careful in that. But what's interesting, it says, if it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. So God understands that relationships aren't always easy, or he wouldn't have given this verse with these qualifiers. As much as lieth in you, God understands it's not just you, it's the other person. But he covers both, doesn't he? If it be possible, that's your responsibility. As much as lieth within you, talks about what you can do. You can't make the other person have a good relationship, even though we try sometimes, don't we? But we can't do that. But the key is, we all want a peaceable relationship. Levels of relationships. I want to talk just a minute about understanding the different levels of relationships and the fact that we all want deep relationships. That's the goal to intimacy. That's the goal to really knowing somebody and having an enjoyable relationship. But there are different levels of relationship that we need to understand. So when we talk about a relationship, you don't want a relationship that you would have with a casual friend with your spouse. I mean, that's not the kind of relationship that would be satisfying or shouldn't be satisfying. So the four different levels. First one is casual. And this is acquaintances, relationships that are surface. They don't have any depth. There's no revealing of the real you. So you're not revealing any feelings, any thoughts, dreams, motivations, failures. These people you're keeping at arm's length. You're not letting them know you. Why is that? Why don't we let people know the real us on a casual level? Maybe they're trust. That's a biggie. Maybe they're maybe we can't trust them. Maybe we don't know if we can trust them. And trust can play a big issue at other levels and keep us from going to other levels. If you know somebody's not trustworthy and they're wanting a relationship with you and they're giving you feelings and thoughts and all this in-depth stuff and you're holding back, right? So casual relationships. Casual relationships, we know things about what people do, those kinds of things. It would be kind of like if Nick and I standing in the foyer, in the entry at church, and we say hi, and we do that, and, you know, we talk about casual things. He asked me maybe what I did this week, and I asked him what he did, and maybe it comes up that, you know, he likes to play golf, which I know he does, and, you know, we talk about those casual things. So in overhearing things and in talking to him, I mean, there's some things I know that he does, but I don't really know anything in depth at that level. Does that make sense? So just a casual acquaintance. Now, there are casual relationships that are very appropriate. You know, we can't necessarily get to know everybody at church. I mean, we should make that effort, but it's okay. We should at least do the casual. I think we should do more too, but at least the casual. Somebody at the store, go ahead. Coworkers. Absolutely. There's probably some coworkers that you could trust, that you could allow that relationship to go deeper. There's some that casual is more than enough. Arm's length is, but you're going to be casual. You're going to chit-chat with them. You're going to be courteous and those kinds of things. So this isn't a bad thing, but it is a level of relationship. But it's not a deep relationship. Any questions, comments? Okay. The second one, chaos. So chaos, what is chaos? Well, the first one, we're not sharing feelings, any thoughts, motivations, dreams. Well, chaos begins, it's the next level where we start sharing real and deeper thoughts and feelings, okay? This can create chaos and chaotic feelings that will have to be dealt with, okay? And so instead of working through the chaos of a changing relationship, it is often easier to avoid the relationship. The other thing, casual, you don't necessarily spend time with one another. If Nick and I were to go to a trip to Eastern Oregon to Bend, let's say, and we're in a car for 4 hours, we'd probably run out of the what did you do last week? You know, we'd run out of that surface stuff, and we'd start talking about some feelings. And I might say something like, well, Nick, you know, you mentioned you like to play golf, and you said next time that you went that you were going to say go, and I heard you had gone, and that really hurt my feelings, and I was kind of upset about that. And, you know, I'm just pouring all these feelings, you know, and then we get back. And so next week when Nick sees me, what is he going to do? Avoid me, right? So it creates some chaos. There, with these feelings comes some discomfort, right? Because we don't always know how to deal with the person's feelings. We don't always know what their intents are, okay? And so this level of chaos, it can create this issue of uncomfortableness. The other issue was thinking that we can change the other party or control them also creates, what does it create? Chaos. Anybody like to be controlled? But how often do we like to control the other person? We don't like to be controlled, but oftentimes that is one of the issues. A lot of relationships get hung up on this chaos level. The relationship either remains in chaos or it reverts back to a casual state where there is no revealing takes place. So in order to get to the next level, you got to work through those uncomfortable feelings. If Nick and I are going to drive another 4 hours to Bend, we're going to have to deal with these uncomfortable feelings, or he's just going to say, absolutely not, it's not worth it, I don't like the feeling, you know, this guy is just, we're not going there, right? Or if he says, well, you know, I didn't understand that and I'm sorry, and next time I will call you, let's go to Bend, and we do go golfing, and that all gets worked out, and those feelings next time, see, we work through the chaos. Does that make sense? And so, but what happens is sometimes is once the chaos comes up and we start getting the feelings and the other person has these feelings that we don't know what to do with and we have feelings that we don't know what to do with ourselves, then it's kind of like, you know what? It's easier to just keep you out here. This feeling stuff doesn't feel good. And one of the issues is that many relationships that should be deeper operate right here at these levels, casual to chaos. Keeping our arm's length, and then somebody says, okay, I'm going to risk it. And we drop the guard, and we share these feelings, and then we get this chaos, and the chaos doesn't feel good, and we go, oops, there goes the barriers. We just back off. Back off. And that's one of the things. So we never get to a deep, intimate sharing of who we are because it never feels good. The feelings scare us. My feelings scare me, and they scare you, and I don't know how to deal with you, and you don't know how to deal with me. We don't ever resolve anything, and it's a lot easier to be casual. Questions, comments? The third one, has to do with getting through the chaos. And it would be like Nick saying, okay, you know, what is this about? What are these feelings about? And if he would just address it often, you know, so where did all this emotion come from that, you know, you thought we were going to go golfing and didn't? And sometimes just a question can get you to the acceptance part. Learning who the person is, that's the acceptance. And emptying yourself of the need to change the other person. We often approach relationships with the attitude that if everyone was like me, wouldn't the world be great? That's how we often approach things. Learning to like people for who they are and appreciating the differences. This is often very difficult in relationships. I heard of a couple who had a major fight, a major disagreement in their relationship on how to clean a cantaloupe. Whether you use a spoon or you use a knife. Okay? Have you ever had any of those? Have you ever tried to change the other person? Joyce and I are different in lots of different ways. We do, you know, she likes to have everything right in the same drawer, you know. Now, she's been working, and I've been staying home, working full-time pastoring. And so I don't always put things in the same place where she puts them. So how do you think that makes her feel? You think there's some chaos as a result?
Definitely.
And sometimes it's those things that, you know, we want people, well, I know how to do this faster. I've been having Joyce, she's a much better typer than I am, and much better at Word and some of those things. And so I was having her type. But even though she's better, I'd sure like for her to do it my way. And so as she's there, once in a while I'll say, here, let me, right? Did I ever do that? Okay. And I do appreciate our differences, that she is faster, but I still would, man, I should just do it my way, even though I'm slower, you know, see how that works? And I heard a story of a man and a wife who had a huge disagreement over cutting carrots. She held the knife funny, and he did, and years he taught her, you know, holding, you know. Thing is, she got the carrots cut, right? And so learning to appreciate the accomplishments, this acceptance. And one of the things that's so important about this acceptance is learn to like the person for who they are and appreciate the difference. There's one of the things that I have learned that if a marriage is going to work or any relationship, we have to understand differences. We have to understand male and female differences. We have to understand personality differences. We have to understand the way in which we were raised, background differences. And if we can't appreciate that, one of the things that Joyce and I came across was that when you're sick, the way in which I was raised was that you send the person to bed, and then if they need something, they'll let you know, and you basically go until you're better, and people leave you alone so you can recuperate. Well, Joyce was raised where everybody makes a fuss over you. And, you know, what do you need? You need some soup and always. And so when I was sick, go to bed or, you know, whatever, and sit on the couch or lay on the couch, and every 5 minutes, what do you need? You want something to eat? You know, it's like, I'm sick, leave me alone, you know? And for her, she'd go to the room or whatever, and I'd leave her for days, you know? And she was like, do you care? You know, and I'm thinking, you're getting well. You know, what do you want? And so we had that discussion, and it taught us that it wasn't a matter that she was trying to annoy me by trying to take care of me, and it wasn't a matter that I did not care by ignoring her. It was how we were different, and I can appreciate that about her, and I think she can appreciate that about me, and that we are different. And so we can see this acceptance in every area of your life, in any relationship, siblings, parents, spouses, this acceptance, this not having to control, not having to change the person, not having to make them something else, and also the acceptance of their failures. Remember, we talked about the perfect relationship with God and Adam and Eve, and they were all there in the garden, and then we had the broken relationship, and then we had the healed relationship. And what was fascinating is there God came and he brought the animals, he sacrificed them, and brought Adam and Eve coats, and he communed with them. And their failures was okay with God. Your failure, you are a sinner in the eyes of God, and that's okay. He still loves you, and he still sent Jesus Christ to die on the cross, and you're still worth enough to him that he died for you, and he still wants a relationship with you. See, that is acceptance. Even not just our differences, but also our failures. There has to be this acceptance that at some point we don't have to no longer repent after we have failed. And there's this level of forgiveness which has also to do with this acceptance. Any comments? The last one is genuine intimacy. This is where we want deep relationships. And this is where we really know who the person is. Someone knows your faults and still decides you're okay. That they know that you're not perfect and it doesn't cause chaos. You see how that is causes intimacy? You can be who you are and feel appreciated for who you are. That is powerful. Oftentimes, though, we can never get here because we can't ever get acceptance. And oftentimes, we can't ever get acceptance because we can never get past chaos. because we're always dealing with the feelings and we don't like the way that is, and so we're always running. And most relationships bounce between casual and chaos. We don't ever get to the acceptance, to the genuine intimacy. We don't ever get there to bounce back between those two, because we're always dealing with the at-arms in the chaos. Any thoughts?
As a pastor in marriages, where do you think the relationships are most to people when they get married?
Most of them are at some level of casual, and they think they have acceptance of one another, but really don't know each other enough to. They haven't shared their deep feelings usually to get to the chaos. And so I think that oftentimes there's this level of acceptance, but it's not really getting to know each other deep. And most relationships in the first 2 years, there are some years that are tough. The first 2 years, year seven, then I think the next one was like 20. There are some milestones in relationships that changes things. And one of that first one is the two-year mark. And I think the reason is because we're getting to know each other. It's the chaos years.
I still think they can change each other.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing. What do you think? Do you have a thought on that?
No, I'm just curious. I think the next question to follow, at what point should a parent, you know, in an ideal world,
well, I guess one of the things is part of this is getting to know one another, and part of it has to do with maturity also. I mean, learning how to accept. I mean, that is a maturity issue more as much as a person maturing as it is for a relationship maturing. We're going to talk about a story where, you know, dealing with acceptance later on that, you know, I didn't do something that was very mature, and it had nothing to do with the relationship. It had to do with my maturity. And I think some of the things for me, I mean, people come to me and, you know, we've known each other a month and want to get married. There is no way that they know each other well enough. I mean, there are some things that I would counsel people, and some of you have heard some of those things that I would throw up red flags and say, you know, we got a big problem here. The other thing is there are some great tools that I've given some people that I counseled that shows levels of intimacy that they have. You know, how well do you know the person? And it just asks a list of questions. And oftentimes we'll give those. I know some of you in here have taken some of those things. And some of those can raise red flags and say, you know, we need to talk about this or whatever. So is that any other questions? Any other comments? Yes. Yeah, relationships would be a whole lot better if there were no people. Absolutely. And the thing is that we have to deal with imperfect people, but the other thing is they're dealing with imperfect people that we're imperfect too. So we ought to give acceptance because we want acceptance, but that concept sometimes it's protection. You know, I know you're not going to accept me, so I'm not going to accept you. Did you have any other thought? Anyone else?
Why specific years?
The first 2 years have to do with the issue of getting to know each other. So if you can get through this chaos, there's some level of comfort with the other person. So the first 2 years is getting comfortable. Year seven often has to do with kids at home, having to do with the issue of trying to get comfortable with income, who's going to work, who's not going to work, how are we going to raise the kids, usually around that. Year 20 through 25 often has to do with kids leaving the nest. And so now you look and there's no longer four people in this relationship in this house. There's no longer six people, but there's just me and you. And who are you? We have, all of our time has been spent with money, with, you know, getting a house, with raising the kids. And now we have to spend all of our time just me and you? I don't think so. Let's call this quits, you know, and that. So those are some of the major. Those are three of the bigger, and there are some other smaller. But those within those years are like 60% of all divorces fall within those ranges. So, other comments, questions? Now, that doesn't mean that it has to be a problem. It's just those often are things that key into major transitions. There can be other transitions, a death in the family, a financial crisis, a loss of a job, and there's all kinds of other crises that have nothing to do with the year. It has to do with your life. Questions, comments? Did you have a thought? Okay. Hindrances to genuine intimacy. There are some things that we can do that will never get past chaos because there's no way you can be intimate. There's no way you can accept the person because you're just going to hinder the relationship and you can never have a good relationship with the other person. One of those is being selfish. It's all about me. One of the things about a relationship is a biblical relationship. The key is that it's not you meet my needs and I'm going to make sure that you do that. It's not about keeping score. One of the problems is that people want a 50-50 relationship. And, you know, you do 50 and I'll do 50. It doesn't work that way. Relationships are supposed to be sacrificial, okay? You meet my needs. You're so committed to this relationship that I am the most important thing you're going to commit to me. And vice versa, I am going to commit to you, and it's not an issue of 50-50. It's that's why in Ephesians 5th chapter, it talks about submitting and loving. It's not, well, the husband does A, B, C, and D, and the wife does A, B, and C, and D. If we do it in the way in which God intends, then it's not about selfishness. It's about my taking care of my wife's needs, and it's about her taking care of my needs. And so there's not an issue. The other thing is in dealing with selfishness is we keep score. And one of the things about keeping score is that we always keep score differently. One is I always get a touchdown. Joyce always get a baseball run. Okay? So her best effort, she gets 1 point to my 7. That's one of the issues. I'm always ahead. She always has to play catch up. So selfishness, you're never going to get to intimacy because you're always looking out for your own interest. James 4:1, from whence comes wars and fightings among you? Come they not hence from your lust that war in your members, your lust, your own desires, your own selfishness? Wanting what's mine, wanting to make sure that I get mine, selfishness. And you're never going to have a good relationship with that kind of attitude. Questions, comments? Hindrances, control, wanting to control the other person. You know, it's not about control. Love is not about control. We talked about God's love for Paul and his motivation to be a servant to God. Well, God got Paul to be a servant, but it wasn't because he wanted to control him. It was because he loved him. You see the difference? And so if we want to control the other person, we've lost the battle. You're always going to be battling about what the person did wrong, what the person didn't do, that what they should have done, how they should have done it, you know, all those kinds of control issues that they're never going to live up to your standard because, one, I doubt you live up to your standard, and your standard is a moving target, control. Part of the control issue is the person never meets the standard. As soon as they meet the standard, you no longer have to control, so you got to move the target. Does that make sense? Control is a big issue. Romans 12:3, for I say, through the grace given unto me to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, according to God has dealt every man the measure of faith. Who is it for me to control somebody else? I'm just a human being. I mean, I'm not God. I think that's pretty important. And then the third one is to win. Sometimes we approach life as winning. Some of you competitive people can approach a argument that it's something to win. This is something that Joyce and I sometimes get into. She's just always wanting to win. No. Sometimes, you know, I will sit down an argument, a logical, you know, I like to think logically. And it's like, you know, I'm going to convince you. I don't really care what it does for a relationship. I just want you to know that this is a logical argument and I'm going to win this discussion. What does that get me in the end? I can say I've won the battle, but does that make her feel comfortable? Does that make her feel that I've been accepting? Does that make her feel that I accept her just as she is? I don't think so. So that winning, that competitiveness, we have to sometimes understand what we're doing in the relationship. Sometimes it's okay to have discussions where it's competitive, but we have to understand that the relationship is not about winning and losing. If you win, your partner, your spouse, the other person you have in the relationship loses, and you think they want to feel all warm and cozy about the relationship being a loser? Mm-mm. If you win, you lose. You lose in the long run. Okay. Working through, any questions, comments about that? Working through chaos creates conflict. Conflict is not bad. It's not bad. Disagreement isn't bad. Sometimes, you know, you see that chaos and, boy, we want to run. It's not bad. Iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend. You know, when we disagree, what we see is that we're different, and I would understand something different about Brother Jim. And sometimes I might need to be challenged because maybe I have a fault that I need to fix. You know, I have a few of those, right? And so my being challenged on that is a good thing. And we take iron, take a knife, and you can't sharpen it on cheese, right? How would you sharpen a knife, Chuck?
That's a difficult question. Take a good stone.
Okay. Does that material, zest stone, have to be as hard at least as the knife? It can't be softer, can it? You want it softer? Well,
no, not necessarily.
Yeah.
But you can sharpen a hard steel with a soft stone.
Okay. But the issue is iron sharpeneth iron, and that sparks. What if you take two pieces of iron and you hit them together? What do you get? Sparks? And that, you know, kind of the issue of chaos. Okay? And so the point here is that it's okay. This conflict isn't necessarily a bad thing. Did you have something else you wanted to add?
No.
Okay.
Just take a piece of leather, sharpen.
Sure. We can hone it right. Okay? Unresolved conflict is not good. Okay? Ephesians 4:26-27, be ye angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place to the devil. So long-term unresolved conflict, the Bible indicates more than a day, is not good. Okay? Conflict is like fire. It can either illuminate or it can destroy. It can illuminate or it can consume. And conflict is the same way. You know, Brother Jim can come to me and say, you know, Brother Harlan, I didn't like when you did that. It made me feel uncomfortable, or, you know, whatever. And I can get in his face and say, well, you know, you're the problem, and blame him, and, you know, it's not really my problem, and if you really was this, you know, and our relationship would pull apart. Or I could say, thank you for revealing that for me, and I appreciate that, and I could take responsibility. Conflict can illuminate, but it's not always comfortable. Comments? Any comments? Okay. We're going to cover this next section. And we're going to end with this. We're probably going to go 5 minutes over. This is one of the most important things that I want to touch on in dealing with relationships. Dr. John Gottman of the University of Washington has done research on how people fight. And he can, with a 94% accuracy, predict if a marriage will last or end in divorce. The issue is not how often or frequently we fight. That is not an indicator. A specific style of fighting, yelling, not yelling, you know, those kinds of styles aren't an indicator. Not what we fight about, They have identified four actions that repeatedly appear in the marriage, in marriages that end in divorce. So at this university, University of Washington, for the last three decades, at this research center, couples come, and the one thing I want to say is these four fatal four things will destroy any relationship, but their research is based upon married couples, okay? But these four things can be done, you know, between parents, or between a parent and a child, a sibling, siblings, any relationship. These four things will kill that relationship. At the research center, a couple is brought into the lab where they live for a whole day hooked up to biofeedback monitors, and they have people observing them. Okay, so that doesn't sound very comfortable, but after you're in that environment for a few hours, you know, you start still getting annoyed, and you still have the conflict and the things that go on in everyday life. They monitor the conflicts that the couple has, and they compile the information. They have more than three decades of research, and they have very high rate of accuracy, 94%. So definitely more than 90% in their predictions. These four red flags that they see couples do that the marriages cannot survive, these are things that any relationship cannot survive. And here they are. Criticism. We all know criticism when we hear it. What's the buzzword at work that they talk about? I know when I was in the workplace, it was always constructive criticism. Well, just slap the word constructive on it, and some people are really good. They'll come and they'll say, I just really don't like you, and you know, you and this, and then they're criticizing you, and you always do this, and you're, you know, and oh yeah, by the way, I want to make sure you understand this is constructive criticism. Well, just because you say it is doesn't make it so, does it? Okay. There is such a thing as constructive criticism. But the issue is, we know what criticism looks like, and we know what is not constructive, and we know when the person intends to criticize you. The issue almost always with criticism centers around a you statement. It has to do with you. One of the issues with criticism, it's not accepting responsibility. It's like saying, you always make us late. You just can't get dressed on time, so we can, you're always making us late. Why can't you change that? Does that sound like criticism? Do you want to give us any examples? Okay, maybe not. Okay. You, criticism. So, the issue is, we all know what it looks like. One of the things that's really fascinating about this is that criticism, they note a huge difference between criticism and complaining. You know, we don't like necessarily complaining, but it was not one of the factors that causes a relationship to end. Matter of fact, they noted that complaining can be good for a relationship because it reveals information about the status of the relationship. The difference between the criticism and the complaining is the I versus the you statement. I feel frustrated when we're late. Is that different than you're just always making us late? See, I does what? Take some ownership of the problem. Now, you know, there's some ways to solve that. I could go without you, you know. I mean, there's ways to, I could help you get ready. I mean, there's all kinds of things, right? But if it's always you mean I don't play any part in the problem? And there's the accept. So there's a difference between the complaining and the criticism, and the big issue is the I versus you. Defensiveness is the second. Did you have a comment? Defensiveness is the second one. Being defensive. Criticism provokes defensiveness. When you feel attacked, our natural response is defend ourselves. Where have you been? You always make us late. Elicits a defensive response. It's not my fault. If you would help me, if you would do this, if you get the car ready, if you'd get the kids ready, you know. And so it's defensiveness. It's kind of like, and sometimes us guys can get this way that you know, we want to fix the world and we want to be responsible for everything. And our wives can simply say, have you seen my keys? Well, I didn't take them. Well, you know, last time I, you know, and we get defensive when all she's asking is, have you seen my keys? It's not an attack on my character. And we get defensive against the other person. The third one is contempt. And contempt is an extension of criticism, but taken to a new level. Not only is the action being criticized, but contempt is a judgment on the character of the person. Contempt can include name-calling, involves the tone of the voice, often is communicated non-verbally. Contempt, one of the strong ways we communicate contempt. You ever done that? You ever had that done to you? Does it infuriate you? Not a word said more powerful than words, and we know it. Nonverbal is a big deal. Where have you been? You always make me late. You are the rudest, most inconsiderate person I've ever known. And besides, you're stupid, right? You know, and we just really go for the contempt. We just don't like you. And we don't like the person. How different of that is acceptance, right? Contempt. Stonewalling. The stonewalling is where the person just gives up. No more participation. Just, you know, stonewall. Oftentimes, it'll be a statement like, okay, just tell me what you want me to do. Okay, just tell me what you want me to say. Okay, let's stop fighting about it for 3 hours and just tell me. You know, you've given up. You don't really mean it. You're not really doing it to fix the situation. You're just so frustrated. You're just not participating anymore. So you've checked out. You're not participating in the relationship. One of the things is that men tend to stonewall quicker than women, and women tend to criticize before men do. And so what happens is a woman will criticize and then the guy will just give up. Just, you know, whatever, you know, and just check out of the relationship. And so then you get a cycle between the criticism and the stonewalling and you never get anywhere. So this is something that we do, and sometimes things slip out. And have you ever said something and you wish you could take it back? You know, you just, once you got it out there, you knew that you were had. And early on in our relationship, I made a you statement. And I don't know why, but Joyce got really defensive. And she even went into stonewalling. The church here had called me as pastor, the mission in the church at St. Helens. And I had told Joyce that day, well, just found out, and I think I had accepted, or no, I was in the process of trying to decide. That's what it was. That's what. Called me once a night, and that was Thursday. So Joyce, I'm working. Pennies or yellow for, I don't remember. I'm doing, working at a store, and she comes in, and she says, I'm pregnant. And my comment is, you sure know how to, you're laughing. Did you do this same thing? You sure know how to complicate things. Okay. Now, what is wrong with that statement?
She did it all by herself.
Okay, that was pretty much verbatim what she said. I didn't do this by my, or something like that. Yeah, I know, but I was brain dead that day, I tell you. You know, it just kind of came out. And so we can you see where that might have been a criticism and not accepting responsibility? Can you see that? I still don't always get it, but I'm told that that was criticism, and I wasn't accepting responsibility with that statement. So her comment was, well, I didn't do it by myself, or something like that. Something about it involved me, I don't know. But then she turned around and walked off. She stonewalled. What am I supposed to do there? Right? Okay. So that created a rift that we needed to deal with. I think you can understand that. So we're still working on that there. So, but
I think it was more like she knew she was going to say something worse.
Yeah, you know, and sometimes there is that element of it too. So, okay. So we can understand how they can be detrimental and how those things can be hurtful. And not even the intent sometimes, but, you know, we can get frustrated in a situation and we don't want to see our part in it and we want to lay it at somebody else and we'll just say you. When I could have said, I'm feeling kind of frustrated with the situation that we are in, would that have sounded any differently? I think it might have. It might have got the exact same response, okay? But, you know, I mean, it wasn't just her. Any thoughts, comments?
Can you have one without the others? Or the fatal four, it looks like one follows the other almost in a relationship.
Yeah, the criticism can incite the defensiveness, and the criticism can incite the stonewalling. Contempt is a whole new level that... the contempt of the person, the name calling, the just not appreciating who the person is, and that is a really bad. But the others are bad too, and so you can have, you know, criticism without anything else. Two people criticizing back and forth. I mean, seen that. But one of the things that often you have is criticism and or defensiveness, criticism and or stonewalling, or a combination of the three, and often a combination of all four. No, no. It could be any one of these. No, it doesn't have to be. These are red flags, and it doesn't have to be all four. The one that is like just the worst is the contempt. I mean, we can see where that is just like, you know, the name calling and the just. But
they don't even like each other, and it tends to express itself usually in one or the other. One is critical. The contempt comes either always.
It can just be two of them. It can just be one, and that the same, you know, that the two people have criticism back and forth. It can just be one, but these are the issues. And the thing that I want you to note is just because we have done it, I mean, I've been critical. I mean, I've given you an example where I was critical. You know, look at what you've done. You know how to complicate things. That was a criticism. And the issue is that, I mean, if that was the pattern and I did that every day and all the time, I mean, that would be something that would have to be dealt with. The issue is we can do any of these, you know, any one time, and they're not fatal. It's the pattern. For one day, they see this as a pattern with a couple, that this is how they approach each other. With criticism or defensiveness or contempt or stonewalling. It's not like once every year or you know, once a month. It's this is their pattern. This is how they deal with each other. And if we have these issues, the point that I wanted to bring these up is that, you know, we have within our power, we're given the ministry of reconciliation and we have the words of reconciliation. We have to at some point take responsibility for us. And so the point is in the fate of four, we need to look, are we these things? Are we having problems with you statements? Do we always make it the other person's fault and aren't willing to take responsibility? Defensive. Guys do fall into a problem with sometimes being defensive, wanting to save the world and, you know, and feel like everything's our fault and that we should have handled that, and we can get defensive when there is no intent of criticism. Contempt is never good, and stonewalling. Now, there's a difference in giving a cooling off period in the relationship and stonewalling. There is a difference there, okay? Sometimes in a heated discussion, it's smart You know, some people like a time to, and it'd be okay in that situation to say, I would like to resolve this. I need some time to think about it. And what you do is you give a point in which, a time in which you'll check back in. Give me an hour, I'll come back. Let's take this back up tomorrow when we're not so tired. You see the difference? In stonewalling, you never know when the person's coming back. And the fear often is they're not. They're checking out of the relationship. Does that make sense, the difference? Absolutely.
With anything and can't express. You can complain about having a critical spirit and about being critical of the person. And I think that study made a big distinction there, talking about how that you can complain about something that someone does and how it makes you feel without being critical.
And I think that's where we get into the constructive criticism. And they said, their study said, complaining was never an issue. The complaining was not an issue. And the biggest thing that they noted in that was the you statements versus the I statements. Any other thoughts? We're going to end there. I got more material, but that's a good spot to end. I know we're kind of ending on the problems, but we're going to have other things. Any thoughts? Questions?
Two words that sometimes people use following.
Yeah.
Those are really inflammatory.
And you lose the battle when you do that, and you're absolutely right, because then, and what happens is when you do that, you start with a you, but if you use those terms, you start picking in the conversation with the defensiveness, and all you have to do is find one thing, one time when you didn't do that, and you can say, see, that's not true, and you defend yourself, and you don't have to accept it. And so we don't do ourselves any favors, but the issue is the you and the always and or you never or those absolute things. We think we're trying to make a stronger case when we destroy our case. Other thoughts? Anyone else? If nothing else, let's all stand.